From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Noah Adams. Summertime is a time for family vacations or traveling to see family in faraway places. We have this story now from Amanda Coyne. Recently, she took a trip out west with her sister to visit their mother.
My younger sister, Charity, turns to her two-year-old daughter as we drive from San Francisco into Dublin, into wine country, into the foothills of the Sierra Nevada mountains, towards the federal prison, and asks her where we are. California, Meg answers, pride in her voice. She asks her who we're going to meet today. Grandma. Some version of this question and answer session has been going on for the last 2 days, since we boarded the plane from Chicago. And scary monsters, Meg adds. She is obsessed with scary monsters. She looks for them under beds, behind trees, suspecting when we pass garbage cans that they hide inside them. Charity tells Meg that there's no scary monsters at Grandma's house. Her voice is mostly a soothing mother's voice, but there's a little bit too much protestation in it. Charity tells Meg that it's like a school, that her grandmother lives with lots of other ladies, that she has lots of friends. Later, when she's older, we'll have some explaining to do, and those explanations will vary depending on who she turns to. My little sister, her mother, will perhaps say that her grandmother did some very bad things, and that people who do very bad things get punished, deservingly so even. If she goes directly to the source, her grandmother will probably tell her that sometimes it's up to citizens to break bad laws. She will give her a lecture, perhaps, on civil disobedience. She will cite others who have gone before her. Besides, she will say, there was money in it, and she needed money. And if she comes to me, I hope I will have a better response than the one I have now, because all I could say now is that I'm caught between my country and my mother, and I'm not sure who's to blame for putting me here. But maybe by the time she's old enough to ask such a question, it will be a moot point. Maybe, by that time, the war on drugs will seem as ridiculous to her as prohibition does to me. But for now, Grandma living in a school will do. Grandma having lots of lady friends will do. It isn't too far from the truth. Grandma's house is fun, 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 Charity says. But still, Meg is reluctant to get out of the car. Even though the building does look like a private girls' school, like no place for a scary monster, her two-year-old world is one that's understood mostly through sound, and she hears something in her mother's voice that makes her hesitate. After all this, the long flight, all the outfits tried on to be the best-dressed daughter in the visiting room, all the promises made to yourself, you will not cry in the visiting room, damn it, under no circumstances will you cry. After being so close, Meg refuses, resolutely so, to pass through the metal detector that leads to the visiting room. First we coax and plead, then her mother threatens, then we get creative. We play follow the leader. Charity does a Daffy Duck waddle, I follow, Meg shakes her head. I do a German goose step, Charity follows, another shake. We finally skip through it, singing Follow the Yellow Brick Road on the top of our lungs. This does it, and on the walk from the processing center to the visiting room, we skip and sing Follow-a, 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 follow-a. After the hugs and the kisses, and she's just beautiful, Charity, pictures don't do her justice. And Amanda, you look so thin. I am sitting on a picnic bench in the outdoor area, watching Meg play in the large sandbox upon which sits a jungle gym, a slide, and a swing set. My mother and Charity are inside, choosing vending machine treats. The other children, mostly boys, are playing as boys are apt to play. They kick each other, tackle each other, they fight for jungle gym space, and they try to yank each other off of swing set seats. Their mothers, a bank robber, a savings and loan scandaler, and a few drug dealers, stand watching them, cross-armed, proud looks on their faces, calling out an occasional, "Not so rough, Billy," or "Play nice, Ethan." If not for the tan uniforms, the prison-issue shoes, the lack of department store cosmetics and professional salons, these women could replace any group of mothers in any city playground, standing on the sidelines, trading cooking tips, gossiping about their neighbors, bragging up their kids. The air is lighter in Northern California than it is in the Midwest, and the quality of light is pink, almost. It casts its hue over the natural wood of the prison, over us, softening it all, lulling me into believing that all of this is normal. Pleasant, even. Meg sits away from the other children in the shadow the prison casts over the playground, running her hands through sand. The shadows here are different than Midwestern shadows, too, deeper, and I can barely make out her expression, but I do notice a slight furrow to her brow, a slight cock to her head. She's listening to something, I realize, something that I'm not sure I want to hear. A guard walks past. She asks me how I'm holding up. Okay, I answer. It's hard, she says. For you too, I say. Harder here, she admits. She was out east, she tells me, in Danbury. My mother was in Danbury for a while. I nod in understanding. The light isn't soft in Danbury. The prison is not tucked away in mountains. There's no outdoor visiting area in Danbury. Danbury looks and feels like a real prison. Mothers look more like criminals in Danbury. Harder for the kids, I say. I'm grown up. I don't need my mother like they do. Besides, this is all so nice. She could be in worse places. She gives me a long look, one that says both, don't kid yourself and don't let it fool you. I'm not quite sure when it started, how long it's been going on, but I'm suddenly aware that music is floating through the compound. I look around, confused. The guard points her thumb in the direction of a small building next to us. Choir practice, she says, and continues her rounds. I look at Meg. Her head is still cocked, but her eyes are wider. I stare at her for a while, tilt my head the way she does, and allow myself to enter her world, to hear it the way she does. I hear how the children's laughter is more like laughter on television than real laughter, forced, without joy. I hear the false insistence in the women's voices when they tell their visitors that they are fine, just fine. And underneath it all, I hear the rumble of scary monsters. I hear the children calling out to their mothers for help, and I hear the mothers not being able to answer their calls. Underneath it all, I hear the sounds of a world gone awry, punctuated by the words of an unspeakably sad and familiar song. I walk over and put Meg on my lap. She is crying. I'm trying to keep my promise not to. We sit on the sand in the shadow of the prison, rocking to all this noise and to the sweet sound of Amazing Grace, waiting for our mothers to come back to us and say something that will make it all better.
Amanda Coyne is a writer who lives in Iowa City.